Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A young woman emerges from the woods with no hands. That's some of the mystery unfolding in Sacred Lies, Sacred Watch's new drama sensation. Great executive producer Ryan L. Tucker and executive producer director Scott Wynn join me next in an internet radio exclusive. Another new creation from Canada is Moving Waves and Making Waves South of the Border. Burden of Truth, where legal cases with life-altering consequences play out, is now playing on the CW. And meantime, Season 2 is in production right now for CBC. And we'll check in with creator and executive producer Bradley Simpson later this hour. Also on our court, FX's miniseries and series suite from the TCA Creative Store in Los Angeles. We have the breaking news on that, our classic trivia question of the week, and what's clear about year 11 of this program. Hey, everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the proud development partner of the New York Television Festival and the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when a 30-day trial comes your way at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Good to have you with us on this Friday afternoon for the program All About Television. We are wrapping up 11 years on the air today and starting year number 12 on Monday. We're delighted to have you with us. Some great people along for the ride over the next 90 minutes or so. And we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. It's so simple. From wherever you are, pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Another way you can get involved is our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and it's waiting for you. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk or Speaker screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Ryan L. Tucker and Scott Wynn from Sacred Lies on Facebook Watch will join us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. FX kicked off today's edition of the Television Critics Association Tour in Los Angeles with a pair of both blockbuster miniseries and series announcements. The network will go forward with two very interesting miniseries. One is a 10-hour remake of Shogun, the award-winning 1980 dramatization of Jane Cavell's best-selling novel on Japan in the 1600s. Richard Chamberlain, you may remember, and Toshirô Mifune co-starred in the original production, which won Emmys and other awards on NBC. The second project is Devs. It's a tech-driven saga set in Silicon Valley from ex-Machina writer-director Alex Garland. Machina actress Tsunoya Mizuno will star. In addition, FX announced two series. One is based on the famous cult movie What We Do in the Shadows that originally took place in New Zealand, but for the TV series version will take place in New York. And what was a long-awaited pilot, now is a series for sure, Why the Last Man, based on the popular graphic novel series. And there's another FX development. Chris Rock will star in the fourth season of Fargo, which will be going into production next year. Premiere date is not set, and yes, Noah Hawley will be back as its executive producer and main writer. Amazon has put a series development deal in motion with Crazy Rich Asians author Kevin Kwan. Few details is about this project so far, except it deals with the globe-reaching exploits of a Hong Kong-based business empire. You should know that the film version of Crazy Rich Asians premieres in theaters across the country on August 15th. And finally, one quickie, Disney Channel is going to be launching a new comedy series next year. It's called, I believe it's called Gabby Dunn and the... Well, forget it. It's a little tough to read because we're having a little bit of issues with the lights because of a thunderstorm that's going on. But anyway, Disney Channel will have a new comedy series coming up next year. And that is news notes for today. In recent weeks, we have focused on some very interesting programming going on at Facebook Watch. It was a year ago that Watch started, and now it's become a home for very unique scripted television, such as 5 Points from Kerry Washington. Well, the latest unique scripted program premiered a week ago today, and it's already winning raves with over 80,000 Facebook followers. By the way, if you don't know, Facebook Watch is available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. The program is called Sacred Lies, and joining us right now from Los Angeles are the two executive producers who are responsible for the show. The first is the executive producer and developer of the series, which is based on both a best-selling novel and a grim fairy tale. If you know the name, it's from her work on True Blood, the long-running HBO series, and more recently, the Peabody Award-winning Marvel's Jessica Jones. The first one on this program, Ryo Tucker. Ryo, welcome in.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is a pleasure. And joining both of us is someone that, if you know the name, you should know he is one of the best episodic television directors in the business. He won the Emmy Award twice for his wonderful work on the groundbreaking ABC dramedy 30-something, and the list of credits he has is long and distinguished, from Californication to The West Wing to Breaking Bad, and now the main director as well as executive producer on Sacred Lies. It is an honor to welcome this program award winner, Scott Winant. Scott, welcome in.
Oh, thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
And very happy to have both of you on. And Ryle, we'll start with you. How did this project come together?
I started reading the novel, The Sacred Lies of Minnow Bly by Stephanie Oakes, about 3 years ago. I got about 20 pages into the novel and instantly called my agents and said, please tell me there's some world where the rights to this are available. And they said, yes, but we can get you an actual paying job. You don't need to try to spend your own money to auction a book. And but I was so madly in love with the world of this novel, and particularly this young female protagonist with no hands named Minnow Bly, that I felt a desperate urgency to turn this into a show. So I wrote it on spec myself and brought Scott Winant on, and we tried to sell it for a while. People were really, I think, intimidated by doing a show like this at most networks, but Facebook Watch took a chance on us and really picked us up straight to series and gave us a lot of rope to go and make the show that we really wanted to make, and a tremendous amount of creative freedom. And that's how we got here.
Scott, what was the road like to get this on Facebook Watch, based on what Ryle just said?
Well, you know, the first thing you do is you always wait for these opportunities where somebody who you've had strong collaborations with, who you respect as an artist, comes to you and asks you to try and sell something that's impossible. It's always exciting. So, you know, the truth is that I think what sold this project is our passion for it. We were very passionate about it. We knew it was a long shot. You know, just if you just pitch the premise, you know, it's a long shot. But, you know, if you actually pitch the premise to Breaking Bad, that was pretty much a long shot, too. And I think we had a similar experience. People respected our passion and our what we were trying to do. But, you know, a young girl without hands is a tough thing to sell. Luckily, I think, you know, Facebook was launching, and they were looking to break some boundaries, and we happened to be in the right place at the right time. So, and that doesn't always happen. A lot of times the kind of things that we develop, we are a little ahead of the curve, and we don't sell, and then 3 years later you see a show just like it on television. So it was, I think, very good timing and really the courage of Facebook to take a chance on us.
Get 219 has just joined our chat room. Welcome aboard. You have a question or comment, put it in the room or give us that call, 646-652-2906. Ryle, you have worked on television shows that have strong female protagonists, Jessica Jones with Christian Ritter, Anna Paquin, and the other female co-stars of True Blood. What inspired you about this particular protagonist to really, you know, be an advocate for the show to go on? And in the end, what was it like to work with Facebook Watch, which is a venture, it's only been a year old, but it looks like they really are starting to hit their stride in doing unique scripted projects, i.e. 5 Points, which is itself a very unique concept that Kerry Washington is behind.
In terms of the female protagonist question, that is what I'm most interested in developing. For years, we've had shows like The Sopranos and Breaking Bad and Mad Men with these really complex male protagonists that are allowed to be your hero while also being complicated, sometimes terrible human beings. But there really has not been the female equivalent until very recently, and Jessica Jones is one of those shows, very few shows that are doing that. For me, what attracted me to this particular hero is that in the YA world, in, you know, novelists have been writing for a very sophisticated young adult audience who who are really interested in premium, complicated, dark, sophisticated work. But in terms of translating that to the screen, I really hadn't seen it done very much. I think I loved Minnow because she's mysterious and unpredictable and complicated. She's a heroine with a disability, which I had never seen interpreted on screen. And you don't know for sure whether you can trust her or that you should. So she's allowed to be more than one thing. She's allowed to be more than just a handless girl, you know, more than just a cult survivor. She's so many different things. And I felt that for a young, particularly female, but a young audience, they're hungry to not be talked down to. They're hungry to see people that they can identify with, that hold up against these other sort of male protagonists that they've seen for so long in television. So that was my attraction to it. In terms of the Facebook Watch question and working with them, I really found them to be truly great partners in the sense that they were willing to take all of the risks that we wanted to take. They weren't afraid of it. We talk about cults and religion and disability and juvenile detention and really heady subjects, and they were not shying away from any of those things. They really trust that they have an audience in their Facebook Watch viewers that are smart enough and hungry enough to have these real serious conversations that the show hopefully are inspiring. And in terms of the platform, they gave us a big enough budget to make the show we wanted to make, and they really let us make it. So I cannot complain. I can only say it's so exciting to get to watch the show on Facebook and see people interacting with it and talk to the fans. And I've never had this kind of connection to the viewers that this show provides.
The program we're talking about is Sacred Lies. It's the newest original scripted attraction on Facebook Watch, which is available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place. The first three episodes are already out, and episode 4 premieres tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Facebook Watch. We have the two executive producers who make this show happen, executive producer and developer Ronald Tucker, and executive producer and Emmy-winning director Scott Winant. They're both joining us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted you're with us on our closing episode of our 11th year at the program All About Television. Coming your way, simulcasting on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for our guest, give the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, guest 219 already in the room. We will head into year 12 on Monday at this very hour, and joining us live will be Al Berman. He is the executive producer of a new live miniseries that kicks off this Sunday night on National Geographic. It's Yellowstone Live. It's the first time ever that one of the great natural wonders of these United States is going to get the in-depth look live. And we will join him, we hope, live from Yellowstone as they get ready for night number 2. That's Al Berman of Yellowstone Live, live with us Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, the kickoff of year 12 of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Scott, given all the ways you have directed TV shows over the years, when you got the premise of this, what was sort of the mandate in terms of how this series is directed?
Well, I think it's all about point of view, you know. Rael wrote a piece that was very much from Minnow's point of view. So I wanted the audience to feel her experience and be drawn into her character. I think one of the challenges was that you have a character with a disability. She has no hands. And like Rael said, I didn't want that to be the focus of her character. I mean, it is definitely an aspect of who she is, but it's unusual for television, which is a visual medium, to put a character like this in the foreground. So, you know, it took some thinking, and we were very, very careful about how we show these things, because it was my desire to have people. We weren't going to shy away from it. This was something we talked to Facebook about. It was very important that it be, you know, present. But it wasn't what the show was about. And so I feel as the viewer watches, they become accustomed to seeing Minnow without hands. And I think this opens up people's perspective to others with disabilities as well. So visually, we were careful about that. We always shot it with respect. And, you know, at the end of the day, the tone is somewhat of a fairy tale. And I say that despite the fact that there is nothing supernatural or metaphysical about the show, but there is a quality to the storytelling that is like a fairy tale. So, and it's the way that Rael and I work together on True Blood, and that's to give it a sort of storybook lyrical approach in the visuals. And so there are certain iconic images that I try to embrace that if you pay attention, you will see certain fairy tale images that we impose into the show. But again, in a very naturalistic, very realistic, grounded way. It's like showing the magic that exists in the world that we all live in.
Rick Webber, our friend from Philadelphia, just got into our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. Welcome aboard, Rick. If you have a question or a comment, put it in the room and give the call, 646-652-2906. Rael, talk about Alana Elena, the woman who plays this character, and what she had to go through to play an amputee.
Elena Kemporis is the actress who plays Minovai, and she is a young actress who has, you know, done some really great film work, but isn't somebody that everyone knows, and that was really a lot of what Scott and I felt strongly about, was finding a new face that wouldn't take you out of it so that you could completely immerse yourself in seeing her as a person with no hands. And how Elena had to approach that, it was so daunting to find a young actress who could not only carry a television show, but also work with, there were about five different prosthetic rigs that she had to work with. So things that were, she slipped on over her hands, puppet arms that she could maneuver with rods, different ones that when she had her hands behind her back, different ones that she was moving. There were all these different pieces that she had to use. And then in many of the shots, they're just something we did in post with visual effects. But even for all those moments, her hands needed to be taped up and covered in sort of dots so she couldn't use them at all. So this actress had to learn how to do all of the things that Minnow would have to learn in a very short period of time. She had to learn how to pick up a fork, a tray, eat, drink, tie her shoes, you know, things that the actual character would have to experience. So there were times where she needed help to go to the bathroom at first. There were times where she couldn't, you know, she couldn't feed herself. And I think for her, it helped immerse her in this character. One of the most important components of the show and in their interpretation of Minnow is that we worked with a physical disability consultant who was a young girl. Her name is Christy Sita. She's the same age as Elena Kemporis. She lost her hand in a boating accident when she was a teenager. And she joined the production before filming started and worked with Elena every single day, not just on the physical aspects of how to portray somebody who's a double amputee, but also on the emotional trajectory of that character and what it would be like to have to live without a limb and all of the things that Christy herself went through. And so she sat behind the monitor. She was there, you know, critiquing everything, making sure we were portraying this as accurately as possible. And I can't imagine how we would have tackled something like this without someone on set with us every day.
For both of you, have you gotten any feedback from the disability community about the portrayal and about Elena's performance? And secondly, this has to be a very, very different production system where an actress like Elena has to literally redo the way, not just the cat, just be a character, but she literally has to redo the way she lives life. She has to literally step into this character and literally redo the whole system of how you do the task that sometimes we take for granted.
Yeah, well, our production was really pretty much a family. And Elena was our center of our family. And so she started to live this character And we, as a company, started to accept her as this character. So, you know, like what Rael said, she found that she needed to lean on certain people. If she had problems with going to the bathroom, you know, our on-set costumer might have to be employed as a friend to do certain things or help Elaine in certain ways that she never thought she'd ever have to. A lot of times on set, Elena had to have her hands taped up so that they were not available to her, and it was difficult to put them in and take them out. So, as you said, she had to sort of absorb this lifestyle. And Christy was always there and somebody who became very close, not only to Elena, but to all of us on set. So.
In terms of the disability community, you know, I have received some messages from people who are very touched to see a character that's being portrayed as more than just her disability. I think often when you know, us norms, or whatever you want to call us, kind of talk about people who have, say, some, you know, exceptional circumstances or are living with disabilities, we don't really know how to do it. And so we focus, hyper-focus, that this is the only thing about them. And I think the thing that was exciting to us was to create a character who survived something tragic and has to carry that on her outside for her life, but it doesn't define her. It does not get to decide who she becomes. And I think that's what we hope is going to be inspiring to people. And so far, I have received some messages from people that are very touched or are very excited to see that portrayed on screen.
You are hearing the executive producer of Facebook Watch's new drama sensation, Sacred Lies, executive producer and developer Al Tucker, and executive producer and Emmy Award-winning director Scott Winn. They're both with us live this half hour on Tomorrow We Televised live from Los Angeles. Simon Appbound with you live from New York, the other side of the U.S. of A. Here with you on Spreaker, Blog Talk Radio, and the iHeartRadio podcast. Number a few more minutes with our duo. And if you have a question or comment for them, don't be shy. Make the phone go at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Next Friday on Tomorrow We Televised, ABC has a brand new unscripted series, one of the most unique they've done in a long time. It's called Castaway. Think sort of an unscripted version of that Tom Hanks movie from some time back that Robert Zemeckis did with him. Well, we've got the showrunner of Castaways, which premieres next Tuesday night. We'll have him on live with us next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, as our 12th year gets underway next week on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. You have about 80,000 Facebook Watch followers to the series right now. And I read that one of the things you were hoping people get from the series is the overall moral, which is no matter what life throws at you, no matter how crazy situations are, the circumstances are, you can get by them if you make the choices to do it. From the feedback you and Scott are getting, are people getting that message?
I do think people are getting that message. I've been so unbelievably touched by the support on Facebook, on social media for the show, and how moved people are and excited they are about the show. And ultimately, it's really positive, hopeful message at its center. This is a grim fairy tale, and this is a cult. And yes, he has no hands, and we go through some dark, dark, dark places and subject matters. But the show is always leaning toward a hopeful message, which I think is really important, and it's the kind of work that Scott and I really want to be putting out into the world, you know? So I do think that the message is reaching people, and I think that's why people are so passionate about the show right now.
And Scott, where does the program go from here, starting tonight with episode 4?
Where does the season go?
Yeah.
Well, this is all pretty much an arc for Minnow. You know, this is about her learning what she believes. She came from a cult where her belief system was dictated to her. She rebelled against a lot of that, but she didn't assume what, you know, coming to the world fresh, she had to make her own decisions. And I think the long arc here is for her to decide who she is and what she believes. I mean, she makes a lot of these. She is a powerful and willful character. Even very early in the show, when the detention director decides that she should wear hands, prosthetic hands, so that she will blend in better. You know, that is certainly her attempt to make Minnow feel more comfortable, but it's confusing to her because it wasn't real to her. They were useless appliances, and they didn't reflect who she was. And, you know, very early on, by I think the end of the second episode, she decides to discard them and force everybody to see her for who she is. And she's not hiding anymore. So that is, in essence, these are all stepping stones to a realization towards the end of our series about who she is and what she believes, all of which she decides for herself.
And tonight's episode is particularly focused on the mystery of who the prophet is. The prophet's childhood, how did he become this man who leads 100 people into the woods? That's the big mystery that will be answered tonight for everybody to tune in.
Scott, John Landgraf, the head of X, who was speaking earlier today at the Television Critics Tour, where you are in Los Angeles, acknowledged that this era of peak TV, I call it plentiful TV, is maybe here to stay. It's not going away anytime soon. And as someone who has directed so many different kinds of episodic television over these decades, what do you think about this era that we're in where you have a Facebook Watch, you have a Netflix, you have Hulu, you have Amazon, you have Apple coming in, you have Walmart possibly coming in, you have Disney with a Netflix transfer, that you have so many different avenues now to create very unique television?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure by the time we finish this podcast, there'll be another network out there. I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Content is spreading to a point now where in order to get attention, you have to do something different. You know, I hate to admit this, but I've been doing this for quite a while. And there was a time when there were three or four networks and the competition was less intense because you could sustain yourself on a variety of cop shows or doctor shows or lawyer shows. But I do remember, you know, when HBO and Showtime first came out, and, you know, I sold one of the first shows to HBO. It was simply sold because it was something that could not be done or seen on the networks. And now it's expanding way even beyond that. And I think that's a good thing because, honestly, I doubt that Sacred Lies would have been picked up had this new era not expanded. Now, I know John thinks that this possibly is heading towards a bubble, that there might be too much content out there, and maybe that's true. But certainly you have to admit that the quality of the material that we're doing is superior. You know, you tried to break rules when the networks were around, and I was working on the fringes with shows like My So-Called Life, but the fringe is now the mainstream, and it's becoming very exciting. When Rael called me about this project, I would say literally 3 or 4 years earlier, it would have been a non-starter, but with this new era, it was exciting, and then the possibilities of it getting done are more realistic. So I think it's very exciting, and sure, it may have to slow down at one point, but I think it's here to stay.
Yeah. And by the way, Scott, you and Lee Holtz and everybody involved with My So-Called Life, that was a fantastic show that I think one of the biggest decisions, biggest goofs ABC ever made was to cancel that show. It was a brilliant program with so much good stuff about it. And of course, Claire Danes has gone on to become a tremendous star, as anyone who watches Homeland or seen her performances in films like Temple Grandin on HBO know now that you guided a wonderful talent to start her on a superb road. Raul, had the experience. Okay, go ahead, Scott.
No, I was just going to say, I think Rael and I would also suggest that Elena Comperas is such a talent. That she, like Claire, she's come to this project somewhat unknown, but this is clearly going to be the stepping stone to a great career.
No doubt, no doubt. Watching her performance, I think we are seeing the rise of somebody very special, like Claire Danes, come to the fore with this show. And now before we let both of you go, you, of course, had the experience before this with Jessica Jones winning the Peabody Award for its first season, developing a talent like Kristen Ritter is now doing her own thing too, plus Jessica. What do you think about this era that we're in, where you have so many ways to get a television show off the ground like this, and you're working with an audience like Facebook, which a year ago, who knew what this thing was going to be, and now you have people like yourselves and Paul Lee, the former ABC Entertainment ABC family, doing a show with Catherine Zeta-Jones, making her TV debut in a dramatic series that will be coming up later.
Like Scott, I think that it's a really positive thing. I think it's turning it into a meritocracy, finally. And I think that, to a certain extent, if you were not in the know and inside the inside circle of television, back even at the beginning of my career, then you were never going to get a show on the air, really. I mean, you know, if you were a person of color or you were a woman, the odds were very much against you ever getting to run your own show when I first started. And now I believe we are really seeing a meritocracy. We are seeing the really incredible shows finding homes, finding audiences, and the kind of people that weren't given the opportunity to tell their stories finally getting to do that. So it's unbelievably exciting. I'm so fortunate to have had the career that I have had in that I've watched it change, and I got to learn how everything was made and what the rules were and, you know, and the parameters of how we make television the old school way, in a way. And now I get to know all of those rules and I get to break them. It's so empowering as a woman who had to fight my way here to finally arrive at this moment where we can really tell all the stories we would want to tell and somebody will get behind them if they're good enough.
One of those stories being Sacred Lives, and you can see the latest episode, number 4, tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook Watch. It is available on most smart TV sets and most smart TV devices. For more details about the program online, two places to go. One is www.facebook.com/watch. That's www.facebook.com/watch. And you can also catch the series at its own web space, too. It's www.facebook.com/sacredlives. That's www.facebook.com/sacredliveshow. That's Sacred Live Show. And the first 3 episodes are already available also on your smart TV set or smart TV device where Facebook is located. And more to come from Facebook Watch, and we will continue to monitor what they're doing in the area of both scripted and unscripted television. Well, I'll talk to Scott Wynn. Thank you both very much for joining us. Congratulations on getting this series off the ground and hopefully the beginning of a very long run. It is a pleasure to have both of you with us, and we'd love to have you back anytime.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. It was lovely talking to you.
You are welcome, Rachel Scott. Take care. Have a super weekend.
All right. You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye now. Rachel Tucker, Scott Wynn, joining us live from Los Angeles. And by the way, to correct the earlier news note situation about Disney Channel, let me tell you the name of the show that they have greenlighted today is called Gabby Duran and the Unsittables. That's Gabby Duran and the Unsittables. That's a new comedy series that will be on Disney Channel next year. When we come back, we're going to be live in Toronto, Canada. We're going to speak with the creative executive producer of the CW's latest original series coming from up north. It's called Burden of Truth. It's called Burden of Truth with Kristen Turek of Smallville and Beauty and the Beast fame, the star, also involved in the production series. Brad Simpson will join us after we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com and Spreaker.com. Together, reaching over 30 million listeners around the world every month and growing. On Blog Talk Radio, check out Let's Talk Health. Check out the crew involved with this new series every week, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, Best BTR is always available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of Swampy Televised, our first episode of August 2018, and our final episode of our 11th year on the air. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Delighted to have you aboard. Looks like the thunderstorm we had over the first half hour of our show has subsided, at least for now. 8 degrees, by the way, at the top of the hour. Next guest coming your way shortly, and if you have a question or comment for that guest, give us a call, 646 646- 652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Rick Webb, my friend from Philadelphia, is in the room. If you've been listening to our show, you know that over the last couple of years, we have had a collection of top-quality shows of all kinds, procedurals and others, come down from Canada and come to the United States. Programs like And With an E on Netflix, Flashpoint on CBS, Rookie Blue, and other shows on ABC. And the latest example of that is called Burden of Truth, starring Kristen Kirk of Smallville and Beauty and the Beast fame. It is now running on the CW Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And as we speak, in Winnipeg, it is now producing its second season. Joining us live from Toronto, Canada, and another NRA exclusive, the creator and executive producer of the series, Brad Lee Simpson. Brad, welcome in.
Oh, thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. What kind of reaction are you getting from the CW fans down here about your series?
Well, see, people seem to be very excited about it. Like, we're thrilled to be on the CW, and, you know, I mean, it played in Canada in the winter, and I think it found an audience, and it grew as the episode rolled out, and I think we're hopefully seeing the same thing down in the United States. So we're all very happy.
What differentiates your show about the legal system from everything else that's on the air?
Well, you know, when I was pitching the show, I was trying to think of how can we breathe sort of new life into the legal genre. I've always been a fan, but I also am an ex-lawyer, went to law school, and, you know, just trying to figure out how can we tell a story. And everyone, all the writers I knew were all trying to figure out how to pitch, like, the next Broadchurch. So I think one thing that always frustrated me about legal procedurals is I just can't handle how quickly they wrap up in an hour. And I think it works. I've worked on cop shows, and I believe that, like, you can solve a crime in a shift or, like, a doctor. But just something about the details and the journey of a lawsuit that I just felt it was so suited to a longer-form story. And so, I mean, I went out and kind of pitched, like, so what if this is like Broadchurch, but, hey, they're not dead, they're sick. You know, can we get the same narrative drive from a civil case? And so, I mean, I think that's where it started. I feel like that's what makes us kind of unique in the legal world.
Mm-hmm. How did the show come to be? Is this your first effort in television? Had you done other TV shows either on your own or with others before? And how did this particular show happen?
Well, I've been a staff writer and procedurals, and, you know, my agent was after me because of my legal background to pitch, legal shows. But so I pitched a few, trying to looking for the right variation. And I think, you know, I think it was a lot of things came together. You know, I think we had an interesting story, an interesting character. And then, you know, Kristen Kruk was reading through projects, picked this one out. It suited her. She felt she really liked the theme. She liked the story. We started collaborating together. We went out and pitched it, and our broadcaster in Canada, you know, took the show and put it into development. So it was pretty, you know, this is the first, you know, the first show, but I've been a writer for a while, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What show did you work? I think you worked on Rookie Blue, correct?
I did, yes. Yeah, for a few seasons, yeah. Yeah, which was a big hit on ABC, one of the first kind of Canadian shows to cross the border and be a big hit in the United States.
Right. We had Tati Cameron last fall on our show, who later went on to do 10 Days in the Valley with Kira Sedgwick on ABC this past fall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love Tati. Tati's amazing. And Tati's you know, hugely successful Canadian television writer, but, you know, she works here. She does, you know, she kind of works in both here, but she's Toronto-based, and she's trained, you know, a generation of Canadian writers, including myself, you know. So I owe her a debt for sure.
Mm-hmm. Talk about working with Kristen, because we have, in America, come to see her grow up on television. First with Smallville, which started on the WB, then went to the CW, then Beauty and the Beast for several seasons on the CW. She's been like one of the first women of the CW, if you will. For a very, very long time. And now here you are with your series becoming the latest CW attraction. was Kristen the person you wanted all along to play the role, the lead role? And how did you enjoy working with? Is this also the first time that Christian has been more behind the scenes, not just playing a part, but also, you know, being a collaborator with you on the production?
Yeah, you know, I think this is the first kind of behind the scenes for her, and you know, working with her has been, you know, such a fantastic experience. We kind of got paired up in the development because she was working with our studio up here, E1 Entertainment, and so we were kind of set up on a little coffee date to see if we, you know, we got along. And I think we sat opposite this table and realized we were both a part of this main character that was on the page, and I think it was just the chemistry was instant, that we both saw the same thing in the show, both wanted to do the same thing, and it's been a fantastic working relationship. And then she came, not only did she help us, or you know, help in the development of the show, she came to all the pitches, you know, which is so helpful for the network to see, which is rare here, it may be more common in the United States, but to see, you know, the star at, on the opposite end of the other side of the pitch table, and you can kind of imagine her in that role. I think it was a huge boost for the series. But, you know, beyond that, like, I think the seasoning she's had of all of those years of scripts and different new drafts, and, like, she was so ready to step into that larger role of creating and storytelling. Like, I think that was, she was just so kind of primed to do that part of her show. And then for us, when we got to production, then we have kind of the number one on our call sheet being, you know, like such a, she's also the nicest person to work with. So you have that energy on set. You have that person, you know, as a mentor to all of the young, you know, female cast members we had. Like, it's been a fantastic relationship with her, for sure.
Mm-hmm. What was the first thing that she had to learn about being a player behind the scenes? What was, like, the most important thing you impressed upon her in terms of working with you and the other writers and the directors and the other producers to make this work?
Well, without speaking for her, I think that she was always someone who was probably ready to ask or give notes or ask questions on her little area. You know, you see that when you work with actors, they're sort of focused on their thing, but to give notes on a broader, you know, on the sort of overall arc of a story or the overall notes in the, you know, story, I think was probably the newest experience. And to also create something from the beginning that it, you know, there's a pitch document, but nothing's written in stone. We can change things. We can develop it as we go. Even as we were in production, we were still, of course, like any show, they were all still moving parts. So, I mean, I think that was, you know, certainly a new experience for her, and she's, you know, she's as good at it. And I think you see that in her, you know, in her, and I think what attracted her with the main character is that she has been so focused on and so successful in what she's done, but been so focused on it since she was, you know, so young that coming into this new role is so flourishing. She flourished in this role.
Kristen Crook stars in Burden of Truth. It's the CW's brand new series. It's on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the CW, local stations across the country. It is also playing on CBC on Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, and the second season is now in production in Winnipeg. We're talking about why it's in Winnipeg in a few minutes. We have Bradley Simpson, the creator and executive producer, with us live from Toronto this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Delighted you are aboard for the Pro Bowl by Television. It's our first episode of August 2018, and also the last episode of our 11th year on the air. Coming to you live, simulcasting on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, also present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And if you have a question or comment for our guest, don't be shy. Pick that phone up and let your voice rip. 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Ripwell, our friend from Philadelphia, already in the room. We kick off year number 12 on Monday at this very hour. Joining us will be Al Berman. He's the executive producer of Nat Geographic's new special project that kicks off on tomorrow, on Sunday night. It's called Yellowstone Live. For the very first time, one of the great natural wonders of these United States will be showcased live and its very colorful splendor. It starts this Sunday night and continues for 2 hours each night for the next 3 nights afterward. We will hopefully have Al with us live from Yellowstone as they get ready for night number two. Al Berman from Yellowstone Live as we kick off year number 12 of the Promo About Television, Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Brad, you talk about the character Kristen plays and also the kinds of cases that she takes.
Well, I mean, I think she's a big firm, big city lawyer. She's someone who has been so focused on success from such a young age my assessment of spending time at a law firm and being in law school is that it takes so much effort to be successful in these jobs that invariably you're going to let other skills slip. And so she's someone who is so good at her job, but maybe so terrible at being a person. And I mean, because it's probably easier to be a lawyer, like there's very clear parameters for success as a lawyer, like, you know, if you make your billable hours. So I think she's someone who's so focused on her work. She hasn't really questioned in a long time what exactly, whether or not this is the right life she's living. And so I think that when we see her, we kind of meet her in the pilot, she's at this sort of moment in her career where she's finally sort of forced to slow down for a moment and confront something about her past, or like a moment that she hadn't thought about in a long period of time when she's sent back to her hometown. And I think what we see is a bit of her unraveling of all of these things that she thought were true, all of these things about herself and her family, and all of these all these truths that she accepted about the way she has chosen to live her life. So it's kind of, she's a character in a bit of a quarter life crisis, or a very early midlife crisis, because she's, so goal oriented and success oriented. She's done it in a fraction of her time. So.
Did you use any inspirations, TV series you've liked in the past for this series? Because of what you just said just now, one series that comes to mind is Northern Exposure.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I love Northern Exposure. I mean, absolutely, that one. I think, I think the main inspirations, I think if we look at the structure of looking at a lawsuit, the People versus O.J. Simpson was a big influence, like just looking at a way you could structure a lawsuit over a series of episodes, with each episode sort of being a little piece of the lawsuit. I'd say the biggest inspiration was actually the book for A Civil Action, which it was a very popular book when I was in law school. I would say that, and then obviously growing up there was, seemed to be another amazing Grisham movie every year. So I think kind of those are kind of the totality of the influences, let's say, on this show.
So, Brad, is this a situation where she handles one case over the course of a season, and each week we get a little more of a piece of the puzzle or a piece of what the case deals with?
Yeah, it's one legal case per season. So the first season is the mystery of what's made these girls sick and what the lawyers are going to do about it, as well as sort of an investigation into that case, as well as an investigation into herself, her past, and her family secrets. And then second season is an entirely new case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When people
and
think
that's the formula, yeah.
Go ahead.
That's just the formula of the show. We're going to do one case for as long as they let us, one case per season.
Mm-hmm. When people think of shows produced in Canada, what probably comes to mind is Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, Vancouver. Winnipeg is probably low on the totem pole.
Right.
And yet,
yeah,
you decided to do the show there. Why?
Well, I mean, I think there's a few reasons. I mean, there were reasons beyond my control, which is we have a we have a provincial and federal tax credit system, which we that helps us fund the shows we make. And so, you know, each province has a different deal and a different kind of financial advantage. And Manitoba was very attractive. Then that aside, we needed access to a small town, which if you shoot that in Toronto, to get to a town that looks like Millwood, you have to drive 3 hours every morning. So there was, it was, you know, looking for a location that felt right. And then there's a fabulous crew out in Winnipeg and a great Manitoba producers who were the co-producers on Capote. It's an amazing town to shoot in, but what it always seems to do is it looks a lot like Chicago. So it's always a stand-in for something. So this was an opportunity to shoot it for itself and just to shoot Manitoba for itself. So, I mean, like, there were financial advantages. And then I think something about the town that we ended up in influenced a lot of the storytelling, because we went out to location scout, and, you know, the show was still sort of developing and finding its tone. We ended up in this this town of Selkirk, which is outside Winnipeg, and we just, you know, got out of that location van. Like, this is Millwood, this is our town, and we felt the tone of the show, and it really informed, I think, a lot of the rest of the story we were telling. So, I mean, I think there were some, it was a financial impetus, but creatively it was a very lucky and happy accident for us. But we often see most of the TV is shot in Toronto, most of it is, or in Vancouver. Those are sort of the hubs of production here. And so I think that this felt a little different. And I think we didn't shoot in a studio, which is rare in Toronto. We shot on the street. We used real locations. I think the audience has responded to that, that it has it's a look that they like. And something we're really, really pleased with. And we're trying to do more of it in season two.
Yeah, and one of the big changes, Brad, is that more and more of these shows are not trying to be stand-ins for New York or Philadelphia or Washington, D.C. or Los Angeles. You know, it's Toronto, it's Toronto. It's Winnipeg, it's Winnipeg. It's Saskatchewan, it's Saskatchewan. It's Vancouver, it's Vancouver. It's like we see the city for what it is, not trying to be a stand-in for a major metropolitan area somewhere in the United States. By the way, in the town that you shot outside Winnipeg, were a lot of the townspeople involved in supporting roles or as extras?
Well, yeah, I think everyone in Selkirk was an extra for us at some point. They were so welcoming, and, you know, you take a big risk going into a town like that, especially if you may need it for season two or season three. You need to have good relationships with the town. You need for them to like you and want you to be there. And they embraced us. They were so excited. They had a big party for our premiere in January. And it was a wonderful relationship that the crew, they kind of gave us everything we needed. And I think we made their town look really beautiful. So it's such an important part of making television, is sort of being good at being good neighbors. And so.
You're now in production on season two there. How's it going so far? And what kind of case are you going to tackle in season two that will be overarching in the season?
Yeah, so we're just finished. We're halfway shooting season two. I don't want to give any spoilers, but I think it's a little bit of a faster pace, a little more high octane show, and a little more of a thriller. I think the tone just adjusts slightly, so I think the audience would be looking for just a different feel, it's a different energy to the case. It kind of deals with kind of privacy rights and technology issues, and I think the audience will really like it. But it has kind of the same characters, but different energy, I think.
It's been very interesting to see with all of the shows now that are dealing with topics in the cyberspace world, cyberbullying or privacy or invasions through cyberspace, you may be on the right track with season two.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's something that appealed to everyone in the writer's room. I think the more we talked about it, the more we felt like this is an important issue, and it kind of felt ripe for drama. So we'll see.
Burn the Truth, the newest Canadian import to the United States. It runs Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Pacific Time on the CW. Check your local listings to the CW station in your area. For more details about the program online, go to www.cwtv.com. It's www.cwtv.com. Kristen Crook is a star, also involved in the production of the series. And you can also catch it if you're up in Canada. I know we have a lot of Canadian listeners to the show. Goes on CBC with Season 1, and it's on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. East Pacific Time on your local CBC station. As more details about the program there, www.cbc.ca. That's www.cbc.ca. Season 2 now in production. Hopefully will go on the air in 2019. Bradley Simpson, the creator, executive producer of Burn the Truth, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on Season 1 and how it's doing on both sides of the border, and hopefully many more seasons to come.
Oh, thank you, Sam. Thanks for having me. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Bradley. It's a pleasure. Take care. Enjoy.
All right. Bye.
Bradley Simpson, creator, executive producer of Burn of Truth, both on the CW and the CBC. That's U.S. and Canadian. Joining us live from Toronto. The series is shot outside of Winnipeg, Manitoba. More tomorrow, we televised, starting with our classic trivia question of the week after these five words from the folks at Audible.com. If you're in the market for a beautiful story, how about a story by Jess Walter? It's called Beautiful Ruins, and you can get it right now as an audiobook that you can catch on trial through audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration, and not only audiobooks by some of the best authors around, but also original audio productions, including off-Broadway shows and material especially made for Audible. And they have over 108,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, including what you are hearing us on right now on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. And all you have to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, audibletrial.com/televised, get one free audiobook, and one with trial service, plus great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. So hear for yourself why at Audible, listening is the new reading, and Audible has the power to transform how you hear the world. Remember, for that one-month trial and free audiobook, it's audibletrial.com/televised. You will be glad you did. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week, and we are still waiting for an answer to the question that we posed on Monday. Here's the question. Ralph Tager was an actor who starred in not one, not two, but three 1960s series. Name one of them. Give you two hints. Two of them are Westerns. One of those Westerns is an adaptation of one of John Wayne's most famous movies, and in many respects, his most unusual. Ralph Tager, we want one of his three 1960s television series for you to name. Two of them are Westerns. One of them is an adaptation of a classic from John Wayne. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full mailing address. And if you've heard with the correct answer, you will win the DVD of the second season of Mr. Mercedes, the Stephen King adaptation from David Kelly, going into its second season later this month on AT&T's Audience Network. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if you just tuned in, missed the question, no problem. I'll post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at my handle at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so. And all the very best. When we come back, given that this is our final episode of year number 11, what has this year given us in television, and what should we take into year 12? The perspective on that after we pause near the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, your home for the best internet radio on the planet, and we're simulcasting on Spreaker.com, and we're also carried on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Blog Talk Radio is your home for Kings of the Morning. Check out Jay King and Clue weekdays, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best to be QR available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. And remember, if you want to catch up on episodes of our show over these past 12 months and earlier than that, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version on iTunes and also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, where we've been on since last fall. All you have to do to connect with iHeart is go to iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click that bar, and you get us within seconds. Welcome back to Tomorrow Be Televised for this first Friday of August 2018, and welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. We've got some wonderful guests in this hour past, and we invite you to stick around because I got some very big perspectives about where we are at going into year 12 of this program on Monday, and I'd love to hear from you about them too. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. You can also use our chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name, our very good friend for years, Rick Webb from Philadelphia, already in the room. So if you use the phone or the room, either way, we will hear you. Yes, folks, we have reached another milestone, the completion of our 11th year on the air, the start of our second decade. And a year ago next Monday, when we started our second decade on this program, I came through with a declaration that we were living in not just one or two, but three eras of television. The era of plentiful TV, not peak TV, plentiful TV, of both scripted and unscripted television. And if you haven't heard, John Landgraf, the president of FX, who coined the phrase peak TV, was at the TV Critics Tour Association Los Angeles earlier today, and he basically said, guess what? Peak TV is going to last a lot longer than I think. I was wrong about this being a flash in the pan. It's happening. It's happening for real. We're also living in the era of diverse television, where we're seeing all sorts of diversity involving women, people of color, African-Americans, Latinos, Asian-Americans, Native Americans, disabled Americans of different stripes and so forth, the gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual community, and on and on and on. And we're going to see more of it. And it's happening. And we're also in the era of smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And if there's one thing that I've learned clear and complete over these last 12 months, it's this. The era of smart TV is everything. It is what is dictating everything in television, the other two eras included. We are now living in an era where, according to Nielsen, a study that just came out earlier this week, at least two-thirds of all U.S. households have smart TV sets or smart TV devices. Roku, Apple TV, TouchJet Wave, Google Chromecast, Amazon Fire TV, NVIDIA Shield, and so on. Some reports from other players put that goal at more than three-quarters of all U.S. households. And that doesn't include, by the way, recent campaigns like the ongoing Best Buy campaign with Amazon Fire TV at their stores all over the country. But there is no question now that given the penetration of these sets and devices, the skyrocketing usage of these sets and devices by any metric you want, hours per day, days per week, days per month, there is critical mass and critical consensus that this is dictating everything in television. This is why Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and YouTube and Facebook Watch and CBS All Access and Sony Crackle, et cetera, are happening, and why they're all raising the quality and the quantity of their programming, along with basic cable networks, pay-cable networks, the broadcasters, the syndicators, et cetera. And along the way this year, there are three developments that I had no clue were going to happen a year ago that are happening that suggest that if you think we've had fireworks so far these last 12 months, hold on to your hat. There's a lot more to go. The first development. Just like when cable systems opened up their channel capacity, we saw all sorts of services jump in, from HBO to Showtime to ESPN to CNN to Nickelodeon, The Weather Channel, MTV, VH1, etc. And over a decade ago, the digital transition led to the creation of multicast services using both broadcast and cable. We are now seeing new programming networks that are using smart TV sets and devices as either the main way to reach you or the exclusive way to reach you. And some of those services we have in this program, like AfroLife.tv, out to be the Netflix for African Americans, and Reverie, out to be the Netflix for the gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual community, and Bizversity, out to be the Netflix of business, entrepreneurial learning, and business programming. And more recently this week, we had the person who founded a project called Blueprint, formerly Craftsy, out to be the lifelong learning Netflix, starting with crafts and a whole bunch of other subjects, like the early days of the Learning Channel before it became TLC. And there's ESPN Plus. And there's much more to come from, like Channel 29 from Refinery 29, like Stage Network, which is trying to be a service all about the theater, which may include scripted series as well as maybe theatrical plays and off-Broadway plays too. At least one network I know of aimed at women. Other networks from a company called Synonym, which is already distributing several networks by smart TV sets and devices. And let's not forget Oasis Entertainment, the family-friendly service that Brooks Hartman of the Fairly Odd Parents fan on Nickelodeon was able to raise over $260,000 for a Kickstarter campaign that we were lucky to feature and showcase on this program. And then there's Apple TV, the programming service, Walmart perhaps getting in, and yes, that Disney family-friendly Netflix service coming up a fall from now in 2019. All of those services will use smart TV sets and devices as their basic way or their exclusive way to reach you and make it work. I see we have a call. Let's take it, and I'll be back with some more thoughts in a moment. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm Linda from Pennsylvania.
Linda, hi. Great to have you with us. What do you want to say about where TV's at and where it's going?
What?
What do you want to say about where TV's at and where it's going?
I don't really watch that much TV, so I don't really care for them. I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I get sick when I see certain images.
Uh-huh. Do you watch shows on Netflix or Hulu or Facebook Watch, which we spotlighted today with Sacred Lies or Amazon, et cetera, et cetera?
Sorry, no.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Is there a certain kind of TV program that you would like to see, that you would watch?
You would have to tell me about it because I usually don't tune in unless it's like I just usually just do some YouTube like knowledge, like educational psychology or life skills videos.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you should listen to the show that we did with the creator of Blueprint, which is doing that kind of programming now on Roku and is going to expand to other smart TV sets and devices down the road. It's all about crafts, but also is doing some of the kind of topics that you're looking at. And there's also Bizversity out of Australia that also is doing some of a Netflix-type service involving business programming, entrepreneurs showcasing what they have to go through, their individual ventures, that kind of thing. So that might be something to take a look at in terms of your interest.
I didn't really catch your names.
Mm-hmm. Simon Applebaum. I'm the host of Tomorrow Be Televised.
Is that on YouTube or?
I'll tell you, by the way, we used to be simulcasting. Our program in 2014, 2015 was simulcast through Brooklyn, at the time, Brooklyn Independent Media, now Brick TV, here in New York. And you can still see some of our simulcast episodes on YouTube.
Okay. I get the name.
So I invite you to check it out. And we also, I used to do a series for 2 years called BK Live, also on Brick TV. And those segments are also on YouTube as well. And incidentally,
okay.
I should mention YouTube Premium, formerly YouTube Red, which had a very good year this year with shows like Step Up High Water, based on the Step Up movies, Cobra Kai, based on The Karate Kid, which has just been renewed for a second season. And YouTube was recently at the TV Critics Tour in Los Angeles, and they are going to be doing a lot more original programming in the year ahead.
Okay.
All right, thanks so much for the call. Really appreciate it. Take care.
Take care.
There you go. We love hearing from you, and we respond because what you say matters. So thanks for that call. And if you'd like to call in with some thoughts, go right ahead. 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. So as I said, the first thing that really came out this year in terms of development that I had no clue were going to happen was this new set of programming services using smart TV sets and smart TV devices as their vehicle to get to you. The second development, blockchain and cryptocurrency. No clue last August what blockchain was or cryptocurrency. Maybe heard a little bit about Bitcoin, but no idea that we were going to see the development of a bunch of ventures that would all have the same purpose, which is to help people who want to create new television series, new films, Broadway, off-Broadway shows, public service campaigns, all sorts of content, create, finance, produce, and also distribute that content either on their platform or somewhere else without the benefit of an intermediary. And if you've listened to our show, particularly over the last 9-10 months, we've focused on a number of these ventures. We started with Singular DTV back last October, and ever since we've had Tata Tui, who we got the creator of at the New York, at the Cannes Film Festival, Live Tree of Death from London. There's Group out in Canada. There's Bond. More recently, we had Crowded Cloud a week ago. There's MovieCoin out of Los Angeles. There's another one called Binge. And there's one that we hope to showcase in the next month or so called Pop Chest, which was at the Scarborough Festival a couple weeks ago here in New York. Trust me, some of these ventures may go by the boards, but at least one of them, I'm not sure who it is yet, but at least one of them, maybe more, is going to come up with the formula, the end-to-end formula, by which new TV series makers can get their work off the ground. We know Singular DTV is working on at least two television series that hope to get off the ground next year, and we know that Pop Chest is working with a bunch of players, including some YouTube players, speaking of that caller from a few minutes ago, who want to get off the ground also. And as I said, we hope to have Pop Chest on in the next couple of weeks. But trust me, this process is going to have a winner, maybe more than one winner. And the third development, and this really came out of left field, is artificial intelligence being built into the television set or the smart TV device. A fast-growing number of these sets and devices now have Alexa or Siri or Google Assistant or Bixby or something else in the set, in the device, and it allows you, the viewer, to control what you want with your voice. If you have Amazon Fire TV, you probably have Alexa, and you can say, hey, Alexa, order me an Uber ride, or order me this Amazon merchandise, or turn the channel to this show. These artificial intelligence systems are still somewhat primitive, but they're getting mature very fast. And if what we're hearing from Amazon in particular is true, people are using Alexa through the television set to order merchandise, to order products, to order services, maybe even to see advertising they want to see, and shows they want to see through their television set. And I think this trend is going to move very rapidly, so rapidly that maybe in this coming year that artificial intelligence could end up being the way to, at long last, usher in an era that people have talked about for decades in and outside this industry, the era of interactive television, interactive content, interactive advertising, and interactive merchandising. And if we're not talking about it now, I think by this time next year, we certainly will be. There are some experiments going on. There's Echo, which is funded in part by Samsung and MGM, that already is doing choose-your-own-adventure-type programming on the personal computer and on some smartphones. And we hear that sooner or later, they will get into the television set. We know Netflix is working on a television series with interactive elements. They've already experimented with a couple of episodes of their children's programming or family programming with that capability. And if what we're hearing is true, every TV set and device from now on will have AI in it. And the AI is only going to get more comprehensive, more complete, and whatever you're liking. So as we close the door on year 11, and we look forward to next Monday, the start of year 12, there is no doubt in my mind that the declaration I made a year ago more than stands. It may end up being quite durable. This era of plentiful TV may be around for a long, long time. Even John Landgraf came to that conclusion today. At least he sort of triggered that possibility. And we are going to see more diversity. In fact, a couple weeks ago I got wind of what may be a very important crowdfunding effort to get diversity jump-started in a huge way. And we hope to have that story for you on an upcoming episode of this program in the next couple of months. And there's many, many more adventures, too, that are in that ballpark. And AI is going to be a very important development to get interactive television, content, merchandising, advertising, and maybe services we've never thought of off the ground. And that is why it is more critical than ever before that you, the public, are fully informed of what your choices are and what you can and cannot do, and also some of the concerns like privacy and information sharing and things like that, and how that could come into play with what you do and how you use television. I've said this a number of times over this year, and I'll say it once again. It is long overdue for journalists who cover this medium, whether they're on the local and national level, whether they're in the trade press, whether they are on CNBC or MSNBC or CNN or Fox News or Fox Business, or on websites like Recode and News.com and TechCrunch, covering smart TV sets and devices, and cover them in a comprehensive, ongoing way. The time to bypass, the time to look the other shoulder, the time to look the other way is gone. And it's a credit to the American public that they, despite the lack of coverage, are adopting and embracing these sets and devices. And they see the possibility, and they want to realize it. The interest level is high. Now it's time for the press to get it back together and start matching their interest with the public's interest. And that also goes to the television industry in terms of coverage at conferences and panel sessions, as well as events like CES, the annual Consumer Electronics Show, which also has given some of a backseat to smart TV sets and devices the last couple of years, and CE Week, which I thought, had it not been for a panel moderator and panelists on a session, would have bypassed the subject entirely for the umpteenth year in a row. Once again, we are in an era of smart TV that is going to dictate where everything else in television is going. And the more you know, the better you're going to be with that era. And who knows? You may contribute a very big deal to how that era and all three eras of television, plentiful, diverse, and smart TVs, going forward from this moment. I want to thank my guests for being here on Tomorrow Be Televised, and I want to thank all of you, not just for today, but also this past 12 months, the start of our second decade on the air, for listening, whether you hear us live or you hear us on replays. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's where you will find all of our episodes from this past year and also episodes from previous years as well. You also go to iTunes.com for that. Many of our episodes from this past year are also available on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app and also on Spreaker's podcast app as well. And, of course, on the iHeartRadio podcast network through iHeartRadio.com. And they're available 24/7. And more importantly, one of the big things about this show now is that you don't have to wait till after the show goes off the air for an hour or 2 hours or 30 minutes to get the replay. It comes on now on our homepage within 5 minutes. So if you come in late on the show, you miss it by a few minutes, go to blogtalkradio.com/televised and enjoy it whenever you like. And remember also that we are available 24/7 to hear you. Whether you email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com, whether you find me on Facebook, or you follow me on Twitter. And I do have one thought. If you like our program on replay, catch us live. We want to hear you. We want to hear your thoughts about the world of television, where it's at, where it's going. Any thought works, as long as it's appropriate, not scatological. And remember, our guests want to hear from you, too. That's why they're on. So use our chat room. Use our phone number. Get involved. It makes the show better when you are interactive along with us. It really, really does. And as I say at the end of every program, we really enjoy hearing from you. I do respond to your emails, your Facebook, your Twitter, social media within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. And I thank you for that. And while I'm at, to give some extended thanks, since this is our final show of our season, I also want to thank all of the guests that have been with us throughout these last 12 months, all the public relations people from the various networks, broadcast, cable, smart TV set driven, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, etc., for making our interviews happen. Thank you to everyone at Blog Talk Radio and my fellow Blog Talk Radio hosts and producers, the Blog Talk Radio people you'll hear shortly that are individually involved with our show. I want to thank Spreaker.com for joining us a few months ago as a simulcast partner. I want to thank the people at iHeartRadio who joined us, invited us to be part of their podcast network. iHeartRadio, one of the giants of the radio business, everything from running radio stations to great syndicated radio programming, music festivals all over the country. Thank you. We hope to do more business with you as we go along. And I also want to thank iTunes, and I also want to thank the many, many people who throughout the year give us feedback in different ways on social media, Twitter and Facebook. We really appreciate it, and we do take what you say in stride as well. And keep that up. We really do appreciate it. Incidentally, I want to let you know that for year 12, we hope to look at maybe having more of this program distributed to more podcast sites in quicker fashion. And also, we are working on a new television version of the program. Can't say anything about it yet, but I hope in the next 2 months or so that we'll be able to finalize everything. I can tell you this. We are committed to, by the end of this year, launching a television program, either the return of our simulcast in some manner or a brand-new version of our show, which would take some of our best features and make it work and have it on a weekly half-hour, hour-long basis. So stay tuned. We'll have more details for you in the months ahead. Remember, again, we really appreciate you being aboard, so keep communicating with us because, one more time, what you say matters, and it matters more than ever. The views expressed on this program – oh, by the way, one other thing before I do the credits, the full credits, I also want to acknowledge my family and my friends for supporting me all the way with this program. And I also want to thank Landmark Worldwide, the folks behind the Landmark Forum, which I'm involved with. This year, by the way, I'll be marking 25 years involved with Landmark. If you've never done the Landmark Forum, I invite you to check it out because it can really make the difference for you with the quality of your life. Landmark is located here in New York on West 33rd Street, right near 8th Avenue. They have introductions to the Landmark Forum and other Landmark courses every night of the week, on weekends as well. Check it out. I think you'll agree that it's something very, very special for the quality of your life. And so thank you to all my friends and colleagues at Landmark Worldwide that I assist with, that I know, for being supportive of the program. Some of them have been on this program, too, by the way, over the years. I really appreciate you. I acknowledge you for your support. Thank you for listening. We really, 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 really appreciate it. Okay? Now we'll get the credits. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate at BTR is Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of Blog Talk Radio are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com, an Amazon company for the second straight year, proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook and 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/tele. And Audible, thank you very, very much to your parent, Amazon.com, for being a wonderful sponsor during this past year, our 11th year on the air. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening today, this past 12 months, and throughout our run as the program all about television. We really appreciate you. We love you for your support. Keep it up. If you like what we do, tell a friend and let them know the program that is all about television will be back to start year 12 this Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. As always, again, thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful weekend ahead. Stay cool because in some places it's going to be a heat wave, also some storms as well. We'll all get through it together. And again, we hope to catch you in the action with us and interacting with us on Monday. Whatever you're doing out there, please make it safe and make it great. And as always, until next time, stay well and stay tuned.